Welcome, everybody, to JSA's end of week recap. Kevin Clausen here, and I'll kick it off with corn. If you go back to last Friday, December corn rallied up to the 100-day moving average right at 509.5. And then it reversed sharply lower, closing down at 495.5. That was a pretty ugly rejection of the 100-day and a pretty ugly close last Friday. And we continued that weakness this week. So we did close up a penny and a half today to settle at 480.75. But as you can see, that's down pretty hard on the week, but also well off of that high from last Friday at 509.5. If you take a look at it back to August, this 480 to 490 level for Dease corn has just been a magnet. And honestly, I don't see what changes that based on what we know today. You know, we have geopolitical issues going on in the Black Sea and the Middle East. You know, that may be providing some support to this market, but overall, it's really not driving us higher, despite, you know, some of the issues we saw out of the Black Sea region this week. When you look at spreads, you know, we tried to rally spreads last week, you know, only to fall back down to 15 cents multiple times this week on the Dease March. We did settle at 14.5. You know, when I look at spreads, I recommend rolling at 15. You know, we may get out to 16, but I think 15 is pretty good value. And I don't see a lot more downside, just given the lack of farmer selling that we have seen. And the vast majority of harvest is going to be wrapped up as we go into next week. Looking at harvest pace, we are ahead of the five-year average. It's really a tale of two stories. The West is well ahead of pace, and the East is way behind. So I expect to see that, you know, again next week. We have several areas that are essentially wrapped up with corn harvest, but you look at Indiana and Ohio, they've still got a chunk to go. But I anticipate we'll still be well ahead of the five-year average on next Monday's report. On the basis front, we are starting to see some firmness in corn basis in the areas that are wrapping up, and some areas that didn't get as much handle as what they had expected. And that's more so in the West. I mean, the East is a mixed bag. I mean, there's still plenty of harvest to go, but there's some pockets there too that have just struggled to really refill the pipeline given the delay in getting harvest going. Looking on the export front, weekly export inspections were only 437,000 tons. That was a marketing year low. Weekly sales, on the other hand, they were pretty good. Came in at 1.35 million tons. That's the second best weekly sales number we've had this marketing year, and it does take us just above the pace needed to hit the USDA number. Mexico continues to be the featured buyer for U.S. corn. We had another daily flash sale to Mexico on Tuesday. That puts them well ahead of their five-year average buying pace. So that continues to be encouraging. But on the other hand, that's pretty known and captive business. I mean, the issue remains China is just essentially absent in the U.S. corn market. And that's what causes us some pause and overall concern about the risk to the downside on that total export number for this year, which would only take our carryout number higher from that 2 billion number, which, as we all know, I think 2 billion is more than ample and doesn't support $5 corn. Looking on the ethanol front, run rates remain strong. We're essentially through all the downtime season. Margins have backed off some, but overall they're still very solid. And I, you know, barring any weather issues, I think we should expect those ethanol run rates to remain strong the balance of the year. When I look at the S&D, I don't anticipate any meaningful changes between now and January when we think about the corn S&D. I think yield adjustments from here will probably be minor, and I think demand adjustments will probably be minimal as well. And at the end of the day, you know, we're going to hover somewhere plus or minus a 2 billion bushel carryout with a bias of, you know, it's probably something 2+. And it's really going to be up to soybeans, and, you know, we'll let Rocky go through that. But if soybeans want to rally on South American weather, that corn doesn't necessarily have to follow. I mean, that soy corn ratio can just adjust. So I don't know that, you know, there's a big bull story on corn, especially when you think about, you know, the $5 level that's been tough to get through, and then that 5-10 level that we rejected on Dease corn. On the flip side, if weather in South America turned out to be really good and soybeans chose to roll over, I do think that could be the catalyst you know, the pushing corn down towards that 450 level, which would be, you know, a new major low for D's corn. So, you know, if that's going to happen over the next 30 days, that I think it's going to be led by soybeans rolling over. Otherwise, back to my earlier statement, I just think this 480 area is good value, and we're likely to hang out here until we get some more direction from soybeans. With that, Rocky, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, the bean complex is being led by meal, not by soybeans, just to clarify a little bit. Meal was up 18.50 on the week, whereas soybeans were down 4.75 cents. The soybean range on the week was 27 cents. The meal range on the week was 35 bucks. So this is obviously a meal-led market. Hard to tell how high we are going. We new contract highs today, right? If this market, if the meal wants to turn to go south, which I don't know how you call that right now, boy, it's going to pull everything lower. Because you think about what's going on, in the, basically beans at 13 bucks, really not doing that much considering what meal has done. Oil was down 112 ticks this week. Today, no Jan spread. I mean, we rallied in last week on the strength in no beans. Shoot, out the 22 and a half cents toward the close today, as people are rolling out of positions and getting ready to, you know, trade versus the Jan. Cash markets, I don't know. The SIF market, relatively unchanged. Brazil market, maybe a touch firmer in Feb. It's still 50 under, right? So Brazil's going to get the bulk of all business on that direction. But cash markets, you know, there's not much there. P&W was firmer. You know, October's 135, Nova's 140. As you look at this thing, plenty of rumors on the week. Rumors of cancellations of 10 cargoes out of for November out of Brazil. And the trade debated as to why. One excuse was poor crush margins in China. Two was they overbought in Brazil. So lineups are huge down there still. And the other one was this. With the meal bouncing back, crush margins in Brazil were significantly better. So the Brazilian exporters actually wanted to keep the beans in-house. Because of that, we heard a couple rumors of beans being booked off the P&W. I mean, Brazil is way cheaper than the Gulf or in the China. I mean, it's 10 cents cheaper for December and 25 cents cheaper for than January. However, the P&W is competitive, at least as long as those guys can still get beans. Strong bean meal sales this week. 1.4 million tons of beans, which is interesting because we only had two cargoes of flashes. So must be a lot of small contracts done. Cumulative sales are 22.9 million tons. We are 9.2 million tons below last year at this time. This is the smallest bean commitment since 2019-20. So, you know, 3 years, 4 years. China's the main culprit, down 6.7 million tons. Unknown's down 1.8, and Africa's down 800,000. To reach the USDA's 1755, we need to sell 565,000 met tons a week. As I look at these numbers, and you know, then you go look at bean shipments, by the way, marketing year high, 2.4 million tons. To reach the USDA, we need 885,000 met tons a week, which is interesting because it wasn't a month ago when I was talking about 970,000 tons a week. So that number is improving. I still believe the WASD is too high on their bean exports by 50. So we'll just have to see as this thing rolls forward. I think the trade is kind of expecting shipments to slow as we roll into November here. But we'll just have to see what happens with the Brazil port congestion. Meal sales, 508,000. The U.S. was most competitive, and obviously that's why the strong sales. That's why meal has rallied. Let's see here. South America, Brazil, like I mentioned, their basis is a little bit better. They're really undefined for the calendar year 2023 if you're looking to buy a cargo. But, I mean, what is it? It's the end of October, so you got November and December. In September, China imported 6.88 million tons of Brazilian beans. And Brazil's still hot and dry in the north. Argentina, I think the most interesting thing is, you know, they had some rain. I think producers are still waiting for another rain event, which I think they're expected in a week out, week and a half out. Bean planting has not really started. Last year, by the way, 8% planted, but I think we were even drier last year. I think it was important. An interesting note, Argentina has imported 9.1 million tons of beans this year. Paraguay, 4.8 came from Paraguay and 3.8 came from Brazil. My bias on bean yields as we look forward, I think we've seen the low of the year. I think exports are a little too high, so I think there's some room there. But this is going to be a meal-led market for the next couple of months. Well, it has been, right? So I don't know. It's going to be tough to say. It's hard to say where we're going on beans. Where does meal need to go? That story still is to be played. So played out. So I don't know. It's a tough call on the bean flat price. I think that's all I got. Wayne, you're up on wheat.
I'm going to start with a comment about U.S. wheat sales to China. This week, we saw that there was 35,000 tons of hard red wheat sold, a commitment made to sell to China this week. They increased soft red commitments by a small amount to 401, and we sold 30,000 tons of hard red spring to China. That all adds up to 460,000 tons. We have shipped so far 278,000 of soft red. We found out we shipped 68,000, which has been on the books for a while, of hard red spring, which adds up to 346. So if you add 460 to 346, you get 812,000 tons of U.S. wheat either sold or committed, shipped or committed to China. People are still looking for China to take anywhere from 2 million to as possibly as high as 3 million tons of EU wheat. They did buy some early in the season. It was a much smaller amount than those two numbers. But the waiting is what people are doing in Europe, and they're all nervous that maybe it won't be that big. I have no dog in that fight. So China wants to import 13 million tons. I still think that's what they're going to do. My suspicion is that when Aussie wheat harvest gets to about December the 10th in the east, you'll probably see the price of Australian prime hard come down from close to 300. It was about the same price as U.S. hard red wheat for many, many weeks. And at that point, I suspect China would take some Australian wheat, but it's certainly possible that they can take some more U.S. wheat too. The prices of wheat in Kansas City continue to lead the drop down this week. They closed down 26 cents this week at 6.43. Which is a new low for this contract move. and settled at 643. Minneapolis was down only 14 at 719. And Soft Red was only down 10 at 575. So you've moved the Kansas City-Chicago wheat from slightly over a dollar for a heck of a long time to 68 cents over Chicago. My suspicion, my target is still $6, which is just a technical number that when you flip over the trading range that they had the for the several weeks before this all started, that's where it takes you. The price of hard red wheat has been FOB for 11.5% moisture, 12.5% protein, has been 297 to 300 for about 2 months. And I think I saw this morning that it was at 295. And you, Russian wheat is trading anywhere from 225 to 235, depending on the buyer and the protein content. We're not, I don't think we need to get at parity to Russian wheat prices to do some business, but we probably need to come down into the 260s anyway. So I think there's probably another 10% down in those FOB prices. And then we might, especially if we can get, if we happen to get there before Australia begins selling its wheat, we might do some more business to Asia, including a little bit more to China. I looked at the rainfall in the last 2 weeks in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. The best way to summarize it that I can see is that if you drew a line from Salina to Wichita, west of that line, there was 50% or less of normal rain. And if you were east of there, it depended on where you are, but you probably got anywhere from 1 to 2 inches and, let's see, one station, Wichita itself, got 5.8 inches. And Hutchinson got 164. And other than that, it was 7,500 and 6,500. So you can see that that line from Wichita to the west is still dry. It's not the end of the world. We have a lot of time. In the Texas Panhandle, the driest area continues to be the Panhandle north of Lubbock, where August to October rainfall is about 50% of normal. I may have neglected to say that when I talked about 50% of normal in Kansas, it also was from August through October the 26th. And central Oklahoma, after the big rains that they've had over the last 6 weeks or so, they're about 60% to 90% of normal. The 60% is one station north of Wichita Falls. We've also got a forecast of big rains again in Rio Grande do Sul, Paraná, and Santa Catarina. Some places are expected to get up to 5 to 8 inches again. My look at all of this about a month ago concluded that there had been enough rain in enough places that grew wheat that instead of having a 12 million ton crop, it probably was down to 10 or 10 and a half. And I would say that if you get the kind of rain they're talking about in a lot of places in Rio Grande do Sul, you probably could take another million tons off that. So you could be down to 9 to 9.5 or something like that. We won't know for a while, but they had been hoping for 12.5 to 13, which would have been a record, but weather didn't give them the chance. And as we all know, Argentina had some good rains. The best rains, the 2 to 3 inch rains, were in an area that if you were at the nexus of the borders of Buenos Aires going west, Santa Fe going south, and Cordoba going south, you would have had about 2 to 3 inches. If you got outside of that circle, which was about a radius of 100 miles, I would say, then you probably got an inch. And then the further away from the center, the lower it went to. So there were some places it only got a half. That's that area that's got that good rain is the most productive. I don't want to minimize that. But as Rocky said, the next good rains are expected next week. So the Bolsa said today or yesterday that the condition rating went from 50 to 58% on the good to excellent, which is good. And but that still doesn't tell you what the yields are going to be outside of that main area. Anyway, that's my review of the wheat market this week. And everybody have a great weekend.